All right, welcome everybody to another episode of Strength Academy Podcast. Mundo here, joined by Grayson.
How's it going, everybody?
So I think we're on episode 36, so we're moving right along. And I was just talking to Grayson about we're about to move. We have a bigger space in the same location, roughly. So we're getting a more square footage in the same unit of space that we're currently located in. And we're going to be able to add more platforms. We're going to be able to increase the space that's available for the lifter, so it's alleviate some of that crowding. And we're looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's going to be really great to be able to get a little bit more space and make sure that everybody's, we can run things a little bit more smoothly by kind of, if we have more platforms available, we can cluster people together during practice. And it just kind of makes that having two bars on each platform is kind of my personal ideal. Yeah. And as long as we can kind of keep it at, not trying to fit three people onto a platform is going to be really awesome.
Yeah, that's going to be real good.
But yeah, really looking forward to the move. As always, with any sort of change, there's always a little bit of stress of, oh, now we got to build more platforms. Yeah. And, ship all of our weights. But luckily, we're moving two doors down in the same facility, so it's going to be a little bit lower stress than if we were moving across town.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's really exciting. We're gonna get some of that going and be able to train in the new facility for about a month before we get to AO2. For those of you listening that are planning on competing, that registration deadline's coming up on the 27th. So if you haven't registered as an athlete yet, go ahead and get on that. It's going to be a pretty fun meet. Talking to Joaquin, he said he's projecting around 600 or so lifters coming out. It'll be the last chance Worlds qualifier, so we'll be able to watch some really good lifting. And it's looking like we might have something like a 25-person roster at this meet.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot, like at least 25 specifically from our team here, and then some people that might be joining us from other places that we're going to be helping out. So
yeah, so that's going to be a 50 hours of coaching, Mundo. I think that's going to be a PR for us, for sure. That's
definitely a PR, yeah.
So that's going to be really fun. So we're in that last, I guess we've got two mesocycles left. We got 8 weeks. So we're working on putting the finishing touches on our strength work for the team program. And we'll be transitioning into that peaking block for the last 4 weeks. And it's going to be a great time, man.
Yeah, and the registration deadline is probably going to be at the end of this month. So if you haven't already, then probably should get on that. I already registered as a coach, but I haven't as an athlete, so I need to do that pretty soon here.
Yeah, we'll have to get on it. They did allow for, they've changed the rules. They're allowing late registration now, but the late registration goes up to $350.
What? Really?
Yeah, so you can register late for AO2, like up to the 11th of July or something like that, but you're going to be paying more than double.
Oh wow. Yeah, no, I'm not really gonna wait.
Yeah, that so long. So do your wallet a favor, especially if you're an out-of-town listener and you're coming in, get on that pretty soon because you don't want to face that price increase.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool that they made it an option, but is it really an option that you want to utilize?
I mean,
if you could just sign up ahead of time and
yeah, avoid it. I see from an organizational standpoint that it's only worth the hassle of admitting people late if they're going to pay you a ton of money to do so.
Which seems like they're doing.
It's good incentive, and it gives people, it kind of takes away the excuse of, oh, I couldn't do it, or I forgot to register. It's like, it gives you some incentive of register by the deadline, or you're going to be out more money than your plane ticket was to get here.
Yeah. So a little bit of housekeeping. Grace and I were talking about some of the lifters in our gym, but we also lift ourselves, and we were talking about a little bit about our training. And I know Grayson last night, he was training, and I had him set up to do some heavy triples in both the snatch and clean and jerk. And how did that go?
It went really well, man. I am back in good enough shape that the triples I did last night are good enough for all-time PRs for rep work. So I got a 92 snatch for a set of three that looked pretty convincing. and struggled my way through a nice set of three for clean and jerk. Because when Mundo programs triples on clean and jerk, he doesn't mean three cleans and a jerk. He means three clean and jerks. And that is a very different game. But yeah. It was a really good training session. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Went in with the wife and lifted some weights last night. And yeah, it was really solid. Feeling really strong. Excited for kind of bringing it up to the peak and competing again here in July with the rest of the team at AO2. And then Mundo had a pretty good performance this week as well. We're creeping back up into some lifts. And so you hit a PR training total, correct?
Yeah, so I hit a 190 total, which I know isn't impressive to a lot of y'all. But to me, like, that's the best total that I've hit in training in a long time. The only other time that I've beat it is in competition. And so I think my all-time best is 191. But yeah, I put together an 83 snatch and a 107 clean and jerk just on a regular, like, we're 8 weeks out from AO2, so like that's really good. That's a really good sign that I'm headed toward my goal. Yeah, I was happy with that, and like I said, we're making progress. So a 190 total in training for me is pretty phenomenal, and I managed to put that together on a day that, you know, I wasn't really expecting to, but I managed to do it. So.
Yeah, and I think the reason we kind of wanted to touch back in and talk about our own training is because, you know, we've got a lot of, you know, phenomenal athletes on our team, and, you know, when you're in the gym with guys like Tyler squatting 240 or Alan and Chris snatching over 110 on the regular, and
Riley, you know, snatching, like, he snatched 102 or 103.
102 in the middle of a squat sandwich, so doing front squats, then snatches, then back squats, and, you know, it's easy to kind of see, you know, the national level lifters on the team and kind of feel like, oh, it's not really, like, what I did isn't really that impressive. But what we have to remember is that what you did is what you did. It's a measure of just you. So, you know, even though, yeah, I mean, the 92 kilo set of three, if you compare yourself to, you know, the best in the country, it's not going to feel like too much. Right. But you just got to remember that, you know, this is for you. Yeah. This is for us.
That's true.
So our own training is kind of going to be a reflection of where we are as individuals, which is kind of what our theme is going
to
be today.
Yeah, so the thing we kind of wanted to talk about, and I've been mulling over some of these things for both weightlifting and life, and the life portion we'll get into in a little bit. But the weightlifting portion, I was kind of wondering about the factors that play into the success of a weightlifter. And it could be at any level, but at the highest levels, there's a lot of factors that go into making somebody a world champion or an Olympian. And I'm not going to say there's a specific amount, like, oh, the 10 factors of being an Olympian, because I don't know exactly what they are, but I have a good idea about what they are. And I think that when we try to set people up for success being weightlifters, there's some things that are within their control and some things that aren't necessarily in their control. And so I want to kind of talk about, like, the things that are fall on both sides of that, and the things that aren't within your control that contribute to being a successful weightlifter, and the things that are in your control that you can maximize to your benefit and get to the level that you aspire to, and maybe even beyond if you know there's some things that you can tweak. So a couple of things that I was thinking about that contribute to a successful weightlifter, I think number one is mindset. How they think about their training, how they approach their training, what they think about both in and out of their training sessions, and how they approach failure and success, I think is vital to whether they're, you know, what level they get to as weightlifters. I think another factor is probably, and that's one that you can control. You can develop your mindset. Another one that you can control is your effort, the amount of work that you put in. And within that falls, like, recovery and things like that, and how well you eat and your diet. And I also think that coaching is another thing that you can control a little bit. So, like, if you find the right coach for you, and you get programming is another thing. So coaching, programming, diet, mindset, and what would you think? What else falls into that? Into the things that you can control.
As far as things you can control, I mean, you've kind of touched on it. The mindset and how you approach training, I think, also encompasses the habit of, people who are really striving to make the best total that they can. So this is all operating under the premise that your goal is to be the absolute best lifter that you can.
Right.
And, I think it's important to be honest about whether you want to lift some pretty heavy weights and have fun with it, or if you're really going to try to milk your potential for everything that you've got. So we're operating under the assumption that that is your mindset and that is what your goal is.
Right.
So, people who are striving for that don't miss workouts. They don't skip things. There's that controlling your training where if you're supposed to train on Wednesday, you train on Wednesday. And, if you're supposed to be doing drop sets after your working sets, you do them with the same intensity that you did working up. Being really diligent and controlled with not just your heaviest weights, but getting taking every rep seriously, I think. That's something that, you tend to see is that if you're really, really pushing it, you're going to make sure that your warm-up is consistent and thorough, that you're being as precise as you can with everything all the way up and doing all of those little things that you need to do to make sure that you're not coasting until you get to 85% and then start trying.
Right.
Because it's really hard to change gears if you've just been kind of going through the motions early on in the workout. That's definitely something that you can control, the level of focus that you have in your workout. Right. And it's something that I have to actively work on when I'm training. Because there's a lot of times that I'll set up for something and then just be thinking about how I need to do laundry later and catch myself not even present at all in my start position.
Hmm.
So I have to really work on not letting my mind wander. And I think just being cognizant of noticing your thoughts and when you start drifting out of that is part of that mindset development.
Right.
It's got to be, you've got to make it important to you. If you're trying to increase your total, you've got to make that kind of, maybe not the most important thing in your life, because of course you should probably not blow off your family and quit your job and, do kind of reckless, crazy things. But, it's not an excuse to be an ass, but it's, you've got to make lifting the priority so that when somebody says, hey, do you want to go drink a bottle of Fireball with me tonight?
Yes.
You
the
say
is yes. No,
you can say oh, well, I recognize that I want to go drink a bunch of wine at this dinner right now.
Right.
But I won't because this is the goal. So being able to essentially delay kind of gratification and comfort to yourself in other situations. So you've got to be willing to put the goal ahead of that's a good way to put it, your comfort.
Okay.
So you've got to be willing to be uncomfortable and kind of accept the fact that you're probably going to be sore for the next 5 years if you're really, really trying to get to that level. I think that you can definitely control. Like you said, rest and recovery all falls within that, and I think it really comes down to all of those things: mindset, recovery, approach to training, not missing workouts, all falls into that category of how important is that goal and how lofty is that goal.
Right.
And I think that people who want to get really good have very lofty goals. I think that, if your goal is to, I want to get to 100 kilos in the snatch, that's a great goal and an achievable one for almost everybody, I think.
Okay.
But in order to really strive to, get to the level that maybe I'll make a team, maybe I'll win nationals.
Right.
That goal has to be more like, I need to snatch 160. I think people have, really ambitious things that they want to do tend to be willing to push themselves a little bit further. So really making sure that, you know, if you want to be the best at something or as good as you can be, set a goal that's going to require you to put in years and years and years of work rather than something that can be achieved in a year. Like, you know, if you're reasonably strong and you're 90 kilos or so, you know, it's not going to take you 10 years to snatch 100.
Right.
You know, that's a goal that's going to come pretty shortly in your training career. But if you push that out and you say, no, this is just a step on the way to 150. I need to get to 150. Your intensity and how aggressive you are with your training and how dialed in you're willing to be kind of depends on the loftiness of your goal, I think.
I think, and so goal setting is something that is definitely within your control. And so when you think about it, a lot of people, I don't know how often people actually sit down and set goals, right? And I'm talking about like micro goals and macro goals. So what Grayson's talking about, the long term, the big lofty, you know, aim for the stars, shoot for the moon, you know, type thing. Those are macro goals. Those are the big things that you want to reach and that you want to achieve. Micro goals are, what do I want to hit this training session? Like, what can I do? How efficient can I make these cleans? How efficient can I make these snatches? How well can I warm up, building up to those weights? Knowing exactly what you're going to be lifting going into the next training session. If I came up to somebody in the gym and I asked them, what are you going to do today? And they said, I don't know. Well, they're not really planning ahead at all. Like, they just showed up, and that's fine. But the difference is that the people that are driven and the people that want to get to that next level, they know what they need to do to get there. They know. So they have to set goals that'll get them set up to hit those things along the way. So that 100 kilo snatch isn't just going to happen by you. Part of it's showing up, yes, but it's not just going to happen by you showing up. You still have to put in work. You still have to have some kind of focus and effort that's going to be poured into that, making that happen. So when we're talking about goals, and this can apply to anything that you want in your life, like people will ask you, oh, well, where do you see yourself in 5 years? Where do you see yourself in 10 years? And those are the big macro goals. Those are the big things that you want to achieve over a long period of time. But I think the micro goals are just as important. It's just important to know, well, I have to do this tomorrow and I have to get this done, just because it's a step along the way to get those bigger things accomplished. But that's stuff that you have control over. And if you're not setting goals at all, then you're just shorting yourself. You're shorting yourself in that process of becoming the best weightlifter that you can be or the best person that you can be. And I'm not saying I'm perfect, and I'm not trying to say that I do this every time, but like having a plan and knowing what you're getting into, especially for your training sessions, like the next day or throughout the week, like Grayson knew, like he had his programming, like he knew what he was going to be trying to do ahead of time before he even started his training session. Like, he was already talking to me about it. He's like, oh, well, I know I'm going to try to increase a couple kilos here and a couple kilos on this lift. Like, he already went into it knowing that this is what he was going to have to do in that training session, and this is what he was going to try to hit. But a lot of people won't even look at the next day. Like, they'll just show up to the gym. They'll look at whatever day they're on. They're like, okay, well, I'll just, you know, this is what I'm going to do today. So, like, you have control over that process, and that's something that I think is a separator between somebody that's driven and that's going to accomplish a lot more than somebody that's not, you know, doesn't have those same aspirations. And that's what separates a lot of like elite weightlifters from people that are just, you know, trying to get there little by little or just get by, is that they have aspirations and they're setting up macro goals and micro goals to get them.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, when you have like solid kind of day-to-day goals and long-term goals in place, it's easier to push through times that are really frustrating or not going the way that you want, because you recognize that the individual workouts, when measured over the term of a lifting career, don't actually matter that much.
Right.
If you had a bad workout, it's not... the workout itself doesn't yield your results down the line.
Yeah, one workout doesn't define who you are.
Exactly. It's the culmination of the process. It's of training consistently, and there will be bad workouts within that. But if you have that kind of longer-term goal where you're trying to really strive for something, you can get through those times a little bit easier, because you just kind of accept that there's going to be some of these grueling, hard, heavy days that something doesn't feel right. But that's all part of the overall process that's going to net a positive return. So being able to be extremely uncomfortable, whether it's frustration or physical discomfort or just fatigue or irritation because you're having to like plan your meals out and stuff, all of those things yield toward a greater happiness in the end. So like being able to put off comfort and the easy way out, like easy routes to happiness or contentment, in favor, instead of, you know, and striving towards a difficult, lofty goal, when you get there, or you get as close as you can to it,
right,
you're going to be much more, self-actualized. Like you're going to have that kind of, you know, the feeling of getting there is going to be better than the feeling of eating the Domino's pizza tonight, yeah, and not going to the gym.
Well, yeah, because, like, you know you earned it. You know you belong there. Like, you didn't just, you know, materialize yourself into that situation. You fought for it and you worked for it. And I think that's, like, a missing aspect of a lot of the things. That instant gratification culture that a lot of us experience, or are part of ourselves, and you know, we don't put in the work, but we think we deserve the results. And I think that when you do put in the work and you do those things, because here's the reality: practice makes permanent. So if you're practicing in a way that's getting you to where you want to go, that's going to become a permanent habit. It's going to become a discipline for you, and that's why we kind of harp on people to warm up correctly, to make sure they're doing the reps properly, to make sure that they're focused on position and technique, and that their movement is sound before we're increasing intensity and load, because those things become permanent. Like the way you practice, the way you warm up for your working sets, all the reps leading up to that should look the same. You should be focused and have the same intensity, because why just dial it up at the last minute? You should be doing it the same way every single time. So, like, practice makes permanent. The way you do things is the way you do anything is the way you're going to do everything. So I think those are things that set people up for success. So, like, what are some things that they're not able to control? Some, like, factors. And so I'm gonna give you a couple of mine, and I don't know if you're going to agree with them or not. But I think a couple of the factors are genetics, number one. Like, how tall you are, your limb length, your torso length, like, you can't really control that. You were born the way you were born, and that's how you're going to be. Like, that's something that you're not going to be able to control. I think another thing is, I don't think everybody has the same potential strength-wise. Like, I don't know if everybody can have, like, a 500-pound back squat. I'm not entirely sure. Like, I don't think that everybody can get to that level. I'm not sure if it goes back to genetics, like structurally they're not able to support the weight. Like, maybe you can build them up to a certain point, but I don't know if everybody, like, across the board is able to do a 500-pound back squat. Like, that's another factor. And another thing is, I think part of it is genetic as well, but the way your body reacts to weight cuts. So, like, being in a specific weight class, like, I don't think I could fit into a 55 weight class. I just wouldn't be healthy.
Yeah.
And I don't think I would be a good 102 either. Like, that wouldn't be a healthy weight for me either. So genetically, I don't think that there's a range of weight classes I can fit into, and there's potential for me to be more competitive if I went down weight classes, obviously, because my numbers would be higher. But to get to those weight classes would become unhealthy, and I don't know if I could maintain the same level of strength. So I think those are kind of limiting factors, and I don't know if you have any more, if you agree with those or not.
I think we can definitely expand out on those a little bit. So I think that genetics definitely plays a role. So if we look at kind of like baseline, some people are... You can find... If you grab a group of any untrained people, like, if you've never touched a weight before, some of them are going to be much stronger than others just naturally.
Okay.
So there is kind of a genetic component to how much fast twitch versus slow twitch muscle fiber you just kind of have as a baseline. Things like jumping ability and like explosiveness are... These all can be manipulated with training, but some people just start at a higher baseline. So if you come in day one and you've never done anything and you've got a 30-inch vertical, you're probably going to get pretty strong pretty easily. Okay. And I think that, you know, so fiber type definitely plays a role. Like you said, limb lengths. If you're just a guy with super, super long arms and legs and a short torso, it's probably going to be a little bit more difficult. Like the road is going to be, there's going to be more obstacles in the road for you. And you may have to do things like go up to 102 to maximize the amount of leverage you have. Because if you're, you know, 6'5" and 170 pounds, you're never going to be your strongest at that weight. Right. So there are certain, you know, kind of cards that you're dealt that dictate where you're going to have to go. So if you're really tall and have really long arms, you're going to have to get to be a pretty big person to do the things that you want to do. You know, if that goal is I'm going to lift as much weight as I possibly can, then the second goal needs to be I'm going to put on 25 kilos of body weight.
Okay.
So, like, you know, and that's not to say do that all at once, but I think that those things definitely make a difference. Other things that impact strength that you have absolutely no control over is it's not just fiber type, but it's muscle insertions. So if you have, so essentially like if muscles can, you know, they attach to the like tubercles and tuberosities on the bone, and those can be varied by, you know, a couple of inches depending on your limb lengths and those sort of things. So if it's, you know, so for example, like chimpanzees have like freaky upper body strength. And that's because their bicep tendon, where our bicep tendon attaches pretty high up the arm, their bicep tendon attaches much further down. So there's just more leverage there, right?
Okay.
So yeah. If you shift the, you know, where your attachments are and then how thick and sturdy those tendons are and how thick your bones are all things that you don't really have much influence over, but that impact how strong you can be.
Yeah.
So that's not to say that genetics is fate, because while some people are naturally born with a higher percentage of fast twitch or a slightly better muscle insertion to create force in a squat or certain limb lengths, the body is also remarkably adaptive to training. So there's a fiber type that, you know, it's not fast twitch and it's not slow twitch. It's called an intermediate fiber.
Okay.
And the intermediate fiber responds to the style of training that you do. So if you do it, and the majority of the fibers in your body are intermediate fibers. So your pure fast twitch and your pure slow twitch, those ratios are kind of up in the air. But most people have a decent amount of this kind of intermediate fiber. And that responds to training. So if you do nothing but cardio training and long distance running, you're gonna, those fibers will look more like slow twitch fibers. And if you do lots of explosive work, those fibers will look much more like fast twitch.
Yeah.
So you can really influence your kind of presentation of what kind of things that you're capable of doing with training. And that kind of goes into kind of an interesting kind of subsection of genetics, which is epigenetics, which is how environmental factors influence which genes are turned on and turned off.
Okay.
So, you know, there's a lot of thinking that, you know, if you're training really heavily with weights, you're going to have kind of a different expression of certain genes related to that. And genes can be turned on and off from environmental factors, nutrition, just what you're doing day to day, level of activity. So that sort of stuff, you can kind of, in effect, manipulate, you know, which things are being expressed and which aren't. So if you've got someone at baseline and, this is also something that you can't really control unless you're very young. But at what age you start training?
Right. I was going to ask you, I was like, this is kind of like an in-between factor, and that's age. Because I think that age can be a limiting factor, or it can be a factor that increases your potential. So when you start.
Yeah. So I think that, you know, if you start when you're 13 or 14, that's a really important time developmentally, because that's when, you know, all the final structures of the body are being put together. All of the neural pathways and motor learning stuff is being solidified. And if you start introducing training at that age, the body is going to kind of take that as, it won't have adapted to anything else, really. It's in its final stage of growing. And if it's, while it's growing, it's constantly moving these weights, it's going to be producing a lot more of those traits that we want to see.
Right.
So if you start, you know, somebody young, you're probably going to be able to get them to jump higher than if you start a similar, like their, you know, sibling when they're 25.
Right.
You know, there's going to be an outcome difference there. And I think part of that has to do with how long you're going to be training. Because if you, you know, take what most people say in that, you know, mastery in this sport is like a 10-year process, something along those lines.
Yeah.
And if you're done with your, if you can accomplish your technical mastery and still be 20 years old, then you're going to be a much stronger person than if you're starting later. So everybody has potential to grow, and everybody has potential to get better. But if you start at 50, you probably won't be as strong as if you started at 18.
Right.
But that's not to say that you can't get as strong as you possibly can at your current age and at your current rate of development.
Yeah.
So everybody has the potential to get stronger, and everybody has the potential to improve. It's just what that upper limit is depends a lot on who your parents were and when you started doing stuff.
Yeah.
Timing. And a lot of those are really outside of our control, unfortunately.
So, and I think another factor, sometimes people consider environment a factor. And in weightlifting, I guess you could call them your team, right? But there's weightlifters who are solitary in their garage who accomplish very, very good, you know, elite levels of weightlifting, and they don't have anybody pushing them or cheering them on or, you know, shouting at them during that PR attempt. So do you think that a factor that contributes to success is environment? Or, 'cause like for me, I think that if you can't do it with those people, or if you can't do it without them, then why does it matter if you have those people with you?
That's kind of an interesting idea. Let me see if I can kind of flesh out my thoughts on that. So I think it might come down a lot to personal mindset, because some people are much more, I don't know if social is the right word, but, you know, thrive in environments with people, and some people are capable of kind of pushing to those heights themselves. And I think that has a lot to do with that kind of determinism and that mindset. Right. Where you're, you know, if you're really, really focused and really dialed in, and that's the kind of person you are, that's good. But I think that, you know, a training environment where you're being pushed and you have, some examples of people doing things that you wish you could do, and you see them do it in person, I think that's a really valuable thing. So I think that it really kind of depends on mindset. And I think that for, you know, the really determined individual, you can make a solo training session work really well. But also, I kind of feel like if you take that person and put them in a room with five other people doing the same thing, they might be able to get 1 or 2% more.
Yeah.
And what you see a lot is, I've kind of noticed that a lot of lifters that train by themselves, tend to do heavier weights in competition than they do in training.
Right.
And people who train in environments where it's everybody pushing to maximum and lots of intensity and kind of camaraderie in that tend to surpass, tend to lift heavier in training.
Right.
And I think it's just that extra psychological push of, so-and-so is watching me, so I can't miss this one. Or,
yeah.
Oh, I want to try to outsnatch him today. And, you know, I think that it kind of goes either way. But what I always find interesting is, like, we talk about the will that you need to have. So, like, the will to set the goal and to pursue it relentlessly and to be willing to put yourself through however much hurt and discomfort and challenge that lies in the way to achieving that goal.
Right.
And I'm always kind of curious about, like, is that kind of insatiable drive to something also a factor? Like, I think everybody can develop more discipline, and I think everybody can develop that, but do you think that that internal drive to achieve is also kind of largely dependent on the individual? Like, I think that you can cultivate those things, but it just seems like some people just have that tenacity and that, like, stubborn will to achieve more than others.
Yeah.
You know, I think that some people are just willing to put themselves through more hurt than others. And I don't know if that's a nature or nurture.
I think that's definitely a factor in success that contributes to success. The thing is that I'm not sure that everybody has that. And I don't know if it can be, it can be developed to an extent. Right? So it's like an obstacle. It's just like your genetic limitations with limb length and stuff like that. I think that everybody has a specific amount of things that they want to accomplish, but some are just more stubborn about accomplishing those things than other people are. And I think that some of it's nature, and they provide, or they get into an environment that accommodates or facilitates that drive for them to accomplish more. So, like, I know we have some athletes in our gym that if you told them there's no way you could do that, they will never give up trying to accomplish that. Like, they will beat themselves to death trying to get that whatever it is you told them that they couldn't do. And there's some that if you told them they couldn't do it, they'd be like, oh, okay. And they might just give up. And so part of that's mindset development, because I think that when you look at children, sometimes you'll come across children to where if you give them a difficult task, they'll relish in it. They'll say, oh, this is an opportunity for me to prove myself. Or this is a chance to, like, really challenge myself. And you see them get excited. Like, they'll kind of, like, it makes them step up, right? And then you give some kids a difficult task and they'll just balk at it. They'll complain. They'll be like, oh, why do I have to do this? This is so hard. Like, why can't I just do something easier? Or, and you see that in training across athletes too. So, like, I think part of it is nature, but I think that you can develop that nature. But it's just an obstacle that some of those people that aren't intrinsically that way, they have to develop. So, like, it kind of deals with personal, like, intrinsic motivation and external motivation. Some people rely on others, and it goes back to that environment thing that we were talking about. Some people will get amped up when they're in that team environment and they're getting pushed and they get peer pressured into doing something that a little more heavy than they thought they could do, and they thrive in that environment. But then there's also the people that are intrinsically motivated and they don't rely on external sources of motivation to try to accomplish what they need to accomplish. They're driven. They want to accomplish those things because they want to do it for themselves, or because they know that they're capable of it, or that the challenge is enough of a push for them to make themselves give that effort. So I think it's just, that's like a spectrum of, instead of saying, like, yes or no, you don't have it, it's a spectrum of, you could lie anywhere on this and you can push it further up the spectrum, or you might just regress or stay where you're at, depending on how much effort you want to put into developing that skill.
And I think that, you know, if you're looking for, you know, greatness in the sport or achieving fully your maximum potential, there's kind of a series of these overlapping spectrums.
Right.
So there's the physical capacity spectrum. What were you born with right now? And then overlaid on top of that is what's your current, like, mental toughness, mindset, goal-oriented layer.
Right.
And then on top of that, there's a spectrum of how well does your current lifestyle or your needs or what you're allowed to do, you know, as far as, like, do you need to work 50 hours a week or can you train more often and work part-time. These sort of things all kind of overlaid each other. And I don't think that any one person is the exact same. So I think that there are lots of extremely tough, gritty people that maybe weren't the most physically talented when they started out, but were able to achieve success through dedication and persistence and doing all of the other things. And then I think there are some people that are very, very physically talented, but struggle with the mentality of, I need to go into the gym today. And I think that wherever you are on those spectrums, there's movement available.
Right.
And you don't get to choose where you start out.
Yeah.
But if you work really hard, you'll end up much further along those lines than I think people don't give themselves the credit of, you know, what is actually possible to achieve.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Because I think that, you know, as far as, like, if you train really hard and if you put in the time and the effort, I think there are certain things that, like, almost anybody can do. Like, I think almost every adult male can probably snatch 100 kilos if they don't have a history of injury and put the time in and do it. Like, I don't think that that's an unreasonable number. That I think that if you almost, if you take almost anybody, you know, excluding, like, if you start it when you're 75, you know, like that sort of thing. But, like, you know, if you're, you know, a guy in your 20s and you put in 5 years, you'll probably snatch 100 unless you're 50 kilos or something, right. You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, so I really think that, you know, it's not unreasonable for every woman to assume, why wouldn't I squat 300 pounds? Because it's not that unreasonable. Yeah. I think most people can, with sufficient training and dialing things in, achieve that strength number. I think that pretty much every woman can squat 300 pounds. I really believe it.
So here, when it comes to stuff like that, like, here's what I think is possible. Like, I think that everybody's capable of a double bodyweight back squat.
Yeah.
I think everybody's capable of snatching body weight, and I think everybody is capable of clean and jerking at least 1.5 times body weight.
Absolutely.
So, like, those for me are numbers, like, I think everybody's potential is, you're capable of doing that. If you put enough time and work in on mobility, technique, and strength, like, I think that you are capable of doing that. Beyond that, we're talking about a range of factors that are within your control and some that aren't in your control, that either are going to have to be developed or you're going to have to overcome an obstacle to try to get to. So, like, it's kind of like, I don't know, not everybody plays video games, but if you ever look at anything, whether it's like a sports team or anything like that, you look at the statistics, right? They all have factors like percentage of shots made or percentage of field goals made or, you know, whatever. So things that are measured. And when you look at individual players, each player has their own set of statistics, right? How many, like, their field goal percentage, or their, like, free throw percentage, like, 3-point percentage for
kill
basketball.
Ratio,
kill ratio. Yeah, or you look at, like, video games, you pick a character, and each character has a different set of stats, right? What they're weak at, what they're good at, things that probably could be developed over time, and stuff that might not be, like, some stuff that's set. Or if you take it into the fantasy realm, like, luck, your ability to use magic or whatever. So, like, you could call it any range of statistics. But if you had to develop your own set of statistics for weightlifting, if you said, this is my strength level, this is my stamina level, this is my recovery level, this is my mental toughness ratio or my mental toughness level, like, if you took all that and tried to, you know, make statistics out of what you're capable of, where you fall on the spectrum, you can develop yourself into a better weightlifter. But there's going to be some work involved. But some of the stats are where they're at. And you just have to take into account, like, this is where I'm at and this is what I need to develop. But I think that having, like, it goes back to the goal setting. Like, if you know where you're at, you know where you need to go. And if you know where you need to go, you can take steps to get there.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, that's part of what makes the training process a really good example of kind of that, like, self-overcoming thing that we've been talking about a little bit lately, where it's the challenges and the roadblocks in place are what makes the whole thing worth doing.
Yeah.
If it was super easy and it was really like, oh, I'm just going to cruise through this, it wouldn't really be that fun. And maybe fun is the wrong word. It wouldn't be worthwhile.
Right.
You know, so, you know, it's pursuing the meaning of, you know, like getting your goals accomplished. And those goals can be anything. You know, in our example, we're talking about weightlifting. But, you know, if you're setting lofty goals for yourself and working through roadblocks, it's really a process of self-betterment.
Right.
And those things come in through weightlifting, but carry over into lots of other things that you're doing. And taking an honest assessment of like, okay, well, what's holding me back on these, and saying, all right, well, these are the areas, these are my stats that are low and these are my stats that are high. Mm-hmm. And say, it's going to be really difficult for me to work on the mental side of this, or it's going to be really difficult for me to work on the mobility side of this. But every couple percentage points I can add to that stat and get it closer and more even with my other ones. But it's just going to depend on who you are, what area that you need to be focusing on the most. And I think that if you try to kind of develop all those levels, you're going to be able to get very far, despite not really being able to control where you start.
Right.
And it's just, things aren't fair. Some people are really, really strong and it comes fairly easy. And some people are really tough and it comes fairly easy. And, you know, some people are, you know, we're all in a better position to get extremely strong than somebody living in, like, you know, an impoverished hovel somewhere, yeah. You know? So, like, a lot of it is luck. And if you're listening to this podcast and you have a computer or a phone or a gym, you're already in the lucky camp that you have the means to do this.
Yeah.
So you're already further down the line than that guy lifting in the grass field in Cameroon.
Yeah.
But look what he's able to do, and look at those obstacles he's overcome. And you look at, you know, these guys training outdoors on, you know, just a couple of boards in the grass, and they're putting up 180 kilo clean and jerks. And say, okay, well, if that guy can overcome not even having a real gym,
yeah,
you know, you're further down the line than that guy is, and he's still achieving.
Yeah, and
you
just know? Think that guy that's training in Siberia in that sub-zero gym, you know, he's not crying about the temperature of his barbell. Like, he's putting in the work, and we're aiming to beat you.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, if you look at the lifestyle that we're afforded as Americans, we are in a really good position for strength. We have essentially unlimited access to nutritious, calorie-dense foods. We have the means to go to a gym. We have, you know, enough of Maslow's hierarchy of needs yeah. met that we can focus on the self-actualization portion. And, you know, if you're in a position where you can make physical strength and, you know, getting as good as you can at a sport 90% of people have never heard of,
right.
you're already lucky and you're already pretty far down that line. And it's just being willing to utilize the things that you already have access to.
Right.
And being willing to organize things in a way that puts you there. And so if you're, you know, struggling and you're saying, well, I'm not as good as I want to be, make sure that you're doing all the other things that'll set you up to be as good as you want. Yeah. And that you're taking advantage of the things that you have, you know, because it's like, I think nutrition's probably like the easiest one for an example, and then maybe sleep. But all of us have the ability to go to bed an hour earlier for the most part, yeah. unless you have lots of kids and you're like up doing this and working two jobs. That's an unlucky scenario.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we can't really control what circumstances we're in, but everyone can maximize what they've got for them.
Yeah.
And it's just, some people are, you know, if you're a guy with a trust fund and unlimited time and a personal cook, and you can do nothing but train and sleep for 13 hours a day, that guy's probably going to be better than you.
Yeah, it's like those, you know, those movie, like, those movie stars that get in shape for all their movies, like, that's their job. Like, they're memorizing lines, going to the gym, and then they have probably personal chefs that cook all their meals for them and prep exactly what the dietitian recommends for them to lean down to whatever body weight they have. But, like, they have professional services being provided to them that are facilitating their ability to reach the level that they need to for their profession. So, like, if we had all those aspects laid out for us, like, if you had your day structured in a way where your meals were provided for you, you know, you didn't have to work a stressful job or sit at a desk all day and or be hunched over or have any kind of limiting factor that would, you know, interfere with weightlifting, then your ability to maximize your potential would be above and beyond whoever else was having to deal with those things. So, like, I think that we don't all start off at the same level. You know, life is kind of like a video game, and the difficulty level isn't the same for all of us. Some of us have better situations than others. Some of us have more difficult situations than others. But how we overcome those things kind of sets the bar for what we're able to accomplish. And not everybody gets there. And the reality is that we glorify and we kind of like idolize the people that are the exception. And there's quite a few, because that's what all these success stories are. But how many failures are there? Like, how many of those 30 and 30, like, stories are where, like, NFL players earn millions of dollars over the lifetime, you know, their career, but then they're broke. You know, they never learned how to manage their money. You know, so they had this huge opportunity. They had this huge thing that they were able to accomplish, but then, you know, they still failed in the end. All these lottery winners, like, you could win the lottery and still end up broke or even in a worse position than you were off to begin with, just because you didn't realize what it took to manage that amount of money or the amount of people that would come after you asking for, you know, pieces of it. So, like, I think with weightlifting and life in general is, like, we don't all start off in the same place. We all start off at different ages. We all have different ability levels, different levels of potential when it comes to strength and body size and proportion and what weight categories we can fit into and things like that. And you just have to maximize the result. You take the cards that you were given, you take the factors that you're able to control, and you control them to the extent that you're able to. And if that gets you to a level where you're able to go to Tokyo 2020 and the Olympics, then that's great, you know, and hopefully all those things fall in line for you. But not all of us are able to get there, and you have to be, that's just part of reality. It's just what it is.
Yeah, and I think being, you know, striving and accomplishing are kind of two different things. Right. In that, I kind of think that the striving is the more important part.
I agree, yeah.
And if it, you know, if you don't get to be national champion, but you trained for 12 years and made one American Open finals, that's amazing.
I agree.
You overcame. You did it. You put in the work. And even, you know, if you fall short, maybe you didn't ever get that 160 snatch, but in trying to get there, you got 130. That's great.
That's still pretty
That's a
good.
Really good lift.
I'm gonna go out on a limb and say this. I'm gonna even say, like, if you get, and some people will probably be like, oh, well, that's not that big of a deal. But I think that if you can qualify for even like the American Open series, like, that's an accomplishment.
Yeah.
Because they set the bar somewhere, and you were able to achieve it. Like, so, I think that even those people that, you know, they'll say, oh, well, the American Open Series isn't really a national level event. I was like, yeah, but there's still a qualifying total. Somebody, you still have to do something that's significant enough to get to that level. And so, like, I know I'm not going to call myself a national level lifter just because I compete at the American Open Series. And that's just my personal view. But I think that anybody that gets to and can compete at that level, you've still accomplished something. Like, you're still on the road to being a better weightlifter.
Yeah, you're still a better weightlifter than 99% of the country, because nobody does this sport.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're still achieving. Right. And I think that if you're willing to work for pretty much anything, you know, it doesn't have to be weightlifting. If you're willing to off-put your comfort now for a greater want or a greater will, and you have this kind of stubborn, I will do this, not I wish I could do this.
Right.
And I think that strength of will. And I think that another aspect that comes into weightlifting is the, you know, bravery it takes to balk what's considered normal.
Right.
You know, it's people are going to think that you're weird if you spend 15 hours to 20 hours a week working out in the gym and the rest of your time getting you ready to do your next workout. People are going to think that's weird. And being able to be out on a limb, being who you really are, you know, being yourself and unapologetically pursuing your goals, regardless of whether or not other people think that they're important,
right,
is one of the scarier things of really trying to push for greatness within the sport or greatness within your career or whatever you want to do.
Right.
You have to be willing to stand aside from what the masses of people are doing and put yourself out there as an exception and as kind of a weirdo for being in that position.
And I think that that even goes for weightlifting, other weightlifters. Like, don't let other weightlifters diminish what you're trying to achieve. Like, I know that everybody doesn't have a national level total, but that doesn't mean that you're not doing your best and trying your best to improve yourself. So, like, don't diminish the efforts of others just because you're in a better place than they are. Like, I don't think that, like, just because somebody qualified for nationals doesn't make them better than you. That just makes them different. They're at a different spot than you are. Like, am I ever going to qualify for nationals? Maybe, maybe not. It just depends on how much effort I'm willing to put in and where I'm at, like, as far as my potential goes. But if I don't, you know, I'm not going to say that I'm a failure as a weightlifter. Like, I've trained and I've put in the effort that I've put in, and I've been able to accomplish the things that I've wanted to accomplish from my own personal goal setting and things like that. And Grayson's done a lot to help me achieve some of the things that I want to achieve. But, like, don't let other people diminish what you're doing. Like, and I know a lot of times, like, people will post videos on Instagram or they're hesitant to, right? Because it's like, oh, well, it's really not that much weight or anything like that. But I think that just the fact that you're trying, like, because not everybody's going to be willing to put that much weight over their head. Or if it's so easy, not everyone, you know, why isn't everybody doing it? So, like, don't let other people diminish your drive or what you're aspiring to as far as your goals are. If your goal is to make it to American Open Finals, then work for it. Get there, you know. And if you see somebody else struggling or somebody's not where you're at, don't diminish what they're trying to accomplish. Like, you're not helping anybody and you're not showing your best foot forward in developing the weightlifting community. So, like, I think that people should be more supportive of each other when it comes to weightlifting, and instead of, like, pointing fingers at each other or saying, like, oh, your total's not good enough, or you're not, you know, you're not elite, I'm not interested. And, like, we should try to build the community more and be more positive, because, like, I remember people were just fighting over, like, the meme accounts and things like that. It's like, that's just all that negativity isn't needed.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that, you know, the person in their third week of training trying to figure out the snatch from the hip, they're working just as hard as the guy, you know, trying to make that total for nationals. It's just that they're at a different spot and they started at a different spot. So if you're, you know, I think it's important to reflect on, especially once you've been doing this for a while, it can kind of feel like stagnation. Sometimes, because over the span of years, maybe things slow down and you're having to reassess, like, okay, well, what am I not doing? Why am I not making progress? What am I not doing? Right. Is it a technical issue? Is it a commitment issue? But I think that, like, really taking the time to, like, consistently step back and say, this is where I started and this is where I am and this is where I want to be. And there's always going to be some gradual movement towards that. Yeah. And it won't always be the weight on the bar. Maybe it's just this block, I ate a lot better and I got a little extra sleep and my knees didn't hurt as much.
Yeah.
And that's still taking steps in that right direction. And there will be plateaus and obstacles, and being willing to go through that discomfort for the pursuit of, you know, that lasting lift. Like, your lifts at a certain point become your legacy. This is something that I heard John Bros talk about on a podcast, where he was saying, you know, at a certain point, your max is going to be the best you've ever done. And at the end of your career, you want to have put in enough work that you're satisfied when you tell somebody what your best ever snatch was. You don't want to be like, if I had just like eaten better and actually taken care of my body, I probably could have got more weight than this, but this is what I got. When you say, when you tell somebody at the end of your career what your PRs were or what the best that you ever did was, you want to have worked hard enough that you're satisfied with what you did, you know? You don't want to, you know, reach the point that those numbers can't go up anymore, because it's not forever that you can keep going up. You know, we age. It's not fair, but we do. And, you know, you want to put in enough work that you can be proud of what you said you've done versus make excuses for why it wasn't what you wanted.
Oh, that's the new tagline. Instead of happy lifting, I think it's going to be lift with no regrets.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
So, all right.
All right. I think we'll call that the end of the show. I know we were going to talk a little bit more about life, but I think that tied in pretty well.
I think we got it in there.
I think we got it in there. But yeah, so like there's a lot of factors that go into making a successful weightlifting career, and there's a lot of things to look at. But just remember, like you're starting where you're starting, and you're at where you're at, and you just have to move in a direction that's positive from there. And hopefully you have people helping you along the way, a good coach, good programming, and you're putting in the work. And I don't think there's much else that you can control beyond those things. So, you know, got anything else, Grayson?
No, just, you know, control what you can and keep the big picture in mind and just kind of keep striving, keep setting those lofty goals and overcoming those obstacles, because that's kind of the whole point.
Yeah. All right. So if you're listening to this and it's on iTunes, like and subscribe, leave us a review. If you have any questions, you can DM us on Instagram at Albuquerque Strength Academy. You can also email us at asaweightlifting@gmail.com. And as always, we're always willing to work with you. If you want to get stronger, come visit us at Albuquerque Strength Academy. Like I said, we're going to be moving, but we're getting some more space. Hopefully we'll get more people in, get more of Albuquerque and the rest of the world strong. And if you have any questions or anything else, just reach out to us. But until next time, y'all, lift with no regrets.
Take care.